ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan, at the completion of the first day of the Boxing Day Test. And we're in the second innings of the match. Australia none for four with a 46-run lead on what was an absurd day of cricket. 20 wickets falling. I don't even know where to begin, but I think the jumping off point to begin with is clearly to welcome my podcast co-host, Ed Cowan. Teddy, happy holidays to you. Feels like we haven't spoken in like a million years, like given the amount of stuff that there is to pull apart out of that crazy day of cricket.
Yeah, and not just the day of cricket, the lead up as well, Corb. So good to have you back on deck, full health with a working microphone and the tonsils working to call all 20 wickets of a day of absolute mayhem. So keen to unpack it.
What's the LL Cool?
But you're right. Happy holidays.
Yeah, the LL Cool J line about don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. Same microphone too. Hell of a revival. It's amazing what's happened on that front. But
Yana Pittman would be proud. Man, that's amazing.
That's another story for another time. But what a day. I mean, first of all, record crowd, 94,199. A little bit like the movie Memento. I might just start at the end and work our way backwards. But first of all, as an overarching thought, Teddy, and this I couldn't escape this running through my mind when I was down there doing the post game. So 20 wickets fell, a record crowd was in to see it. Australia batted twice on the day. Was it good?
Hang on, just pause there. Just pause. That is absurd.
Yeah.
They batted twice in the day on day one of a Boxing Day test. As an opening batter, that actually just throws me off centre a little bit.
So There was action all the time and you couldn't look away and everything else, but was it actually good for Test cricket? Like, was that a good day for Test cricket?
No. I think there's a pretty fine balance between action, excitement and carnage and chaos. And I think this tipped the balance into carnage and chaos. And the things that come to mind were, would it have been possible for it to be a 13 or 14 wicket day? And how much is attributable to the conducive conditions and how much is attributable to some pretty average batting? And I think it's probably 60-40 conditions. I think there was some pretty average batting. I'll tell you what's gone out of the game, Corb. The forward defence. The locked-in forward defence under the eyes, bat and pad together where the ball just kind of trickles back to the bowler and you show the maker's name and maybe call me old-fashioned, but a few more of those today. And I still think it probably would have been a 13 or 14 wicket day because there would have been balls with your name on it. But a little bit of graft, a little bit of technique, a little bit more patience, and I think we would have seen a lesser outcome of carnage. But I think there was too much grass on the wicket. Yeah. I think last year, what was it, 7 mils?
Yep.
Today was 10. I kind of like 7. I like 7 and 8 as a number. I think, you know, the kids of the day, they like 6-7 mils, but I like 7-8.
I mean, there's a lot to pull apart on the pitch front. I mean, I think I probably more sit in the other camp on this, that it's never been cheaper to get a wicket in modern cricket than it is today, right? The ball dominates the bat and we sort of yearn for these old school techniques and everything else. When do we get to a point as a game where we say, this is what the modern player plays like? We tip incentives basically in directions to eradicate the forward defence and all these types of things. I mean, the money in the game is in T20 cricket. That's where the players obviously make most of their dough. And so then we sort of prepare these pitches where we think, you know, it's going to be a challenge anyway. Then we're going to make it even more challenging. We're going to give them this difficult wicket and everything else. We think, I don't think the batting team needs any more sort of elements tipped against them. I think they were almost to the time where we think, you know what, let's produce a wicket that's going to go days because that would be better for Test cricket to get multiple days, particularly on an occasion like this, than it is to have a really good challenge of the batting team and test out their techniques, for example. Well, I think we got our answer, don't we, Teddy, that their techniques are not up to snuff. And so why do we need to spruce up our wickets to make it even more challenging?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky one to answer, but I'll have a go. And I'm not calling for the old Jeffrey boycott dead bat. I'm just saying have it in the repertoire for when conditions turn so far against you.
Yep.
that, you know, a day like today calls on a different set of skills. So I don't mind the swinging and seaming ball. As I said, I think it was a little extreme today. But you're right. I think four-day tests are about, we've said all season, are about the kind of Goldilocks number. And given that, and given the way the modern game is going, how can we start thinking about pitch preparation in that fashion? One thing I do know, today is a lot more interesting than a 2-for-220 kind of day where you can't score, it's low and slow, and it's a bit of a turgid old affair. I don't think that's good for anyone either. So, you know, in response to what you have to say, I kind of get it, but I also think the way the modern game is being selected, you're allowed a mix of players, and you kind of think of the team as, you know, sorry, 2 seconds. You're thinking of the team as a collection of skills with this overarching kind of view that, yes, we want to play positive cricket, but you're allowed a grafter and an attacking player. But if you look through the list, it's very much, you know, particularly England, it's a one size fits all approach, and that proved to be disastrous. You know, Australia less so, but I don't know. Maybe I just crave for that forward defence, and it's me getting old. And maybe it would have caused the same carnage. I don't know.
I mean, we want that balance, don't we, between bat and ball? But I mean, I think of that, you know, series over in the UK between England and India. They were flat feather beds. Every test went 5 days. They didn't have an issue getting a result. I think there was only one washout, which was in Manchester. Shock. Other than that, there were four results, and the series was tied 2-2, and it was great cricket. So, no, I think that if we keep doing this, and these are the results, and these are the test matches, then the revenue, yeah, for the broadcasters is going to go down. Cricket Australia are going to miss out on a whole lot of cash. The first 3 days are sold out, you know, 90,000. And how ridiculous is it to think that we're going home at stumps on day one and thinking, are we going to get to day three? Is it going to be another 2-day test? And then whatever they miss on day four and everything else. So, I mean, I think we spoke a little bit in the aftermath of the Perth test that I don't necessarily think that, a good quick game is necessarily the way to go here, that we need some days of test cricket. And it feels like the general public are craving for it. There was almost a sense of, you know, you couldn't look away in the ground today, but I agree with what Jason Gillespie said at stumps. It felt like there was a little bit of disappointment too, that people were thinking this is moving too quick. This isn't what we wanted.
So on the flip side, so I agree with everything you've said. On the flip side, if it was 2-for-220, would you be thinking, that was a great day's test cricket, and you would have walked out of the gate with a big smile on your face?
I just don't think it would be. I think the way the guys play, they play so much white ball cricket that they're not the kind of players nowadays that would do that. That would just block it out, and yeah, that they want to score. And we saw that in that England India series, that you'll get your 20 wickets anyway at some stage, because you'll get enough chances, because the guys are chancy players nowadays. Who plays a chanceless innings for, you know, 300 balls or whatever? Like, it just I just don't think it happens all that often in modern cricket. So I don't know. You'd have to be an out-of-the-box player playing a completely different way than, you know, the way the game's going. And every, you know, 17, 18-year-old, 19-year-old that enters the cricket world nowadays is not built the way they once were. I don't think anyone's, you know, coming through, you know, blocking them out like Geoffrey Boycott used to do.
Yeah, I'm playing a little bit of a devil's advocate. And to be fair, I don't do this very often. I'll probably concede this one. I think everything you've said makes sense to me. So I'll give you a little W, to be fair.
Let's unpick the day. So team sheets come through, three changes for the Aussies. Jai Richardson is in, along with Michael Nisa and Steve Smith, as anticipated. Inglis lost his place at selection. We talked a little bit about that on Monday. And obviously Nathan Lyon and Pat Cummins both missing through injury. What did you make of the team, firstly, that the Aussies put out there with Green at 7 and obviously Usman Khawaja at 5?
So as kind of predicted, no spinner. So let's just put that to one side. I think given the surface and 20 wickets, were pretty happy for the all fast bowling attack to hit the ground running. As the batters lined up, and I haven't changed my view necessarily here, I don't love the idea, but he played pretty well of Usman batting at five. I think it's a bit of a cop-out, but so be it. I'm not going to die in a ditch over it. And in actual fact, for whatever reason, maybe it was, you know, the knowledge of coming in at five, he actually moved pretty well. I thought he probably moved as fluently as anyone in the Australian lineup. For, you know, the first time in a while, he was getting forward, he was driving down the ground, he wasn't necessarily relying on his cut and pull. And, you know, it took a good piece of bowling to get him, albeit a dismissal that was all too familiar. So it was kind of a toss of the coin, wasn't it? Inglis or Khawaja. You know, you probably look down the list and you probably say that's probably a stronger team with Green at seven the way he's going. And so, you know, I didn't feel that strongly one way or another. I feel for Josh Inglis in a sense, but at the same time, I never was really that convinced that he was the next guy in Australian conditions to be, you know, the next batter in. But, you know, he had had his chance and didn't take it. And so the team kind of landed where I thought it would, with the one exception being Jai Richardson, which I'm still scratching my head over a little bit. Maybe you have better statistics. How many first-class games since he came back from shoulder surgery? The two? I can't
remember. Yeah, and they were both Cricket Australia controlled games, so he didn't come back through.
That's right. It was Australia A game. It wasn't a Shield game.
Yeah.
So... And what I saw, I wasn't thinking, oh, wow, he's cranking it to 150 and, gee, you know, what a great selection. He was kind of rolling him out and the ball wasn't really moving. The seam was a bit scrambled. I was thinking, I'd feel a bit aggrieved if I was Brendan Doggett. But, all you know, you wrap that all up and you say, well, 150 played 100 and doesn't really matter. Take your pick. Pick him out of a hat.
Yeah. I was surprised he didn't bowl as quick as probably what I was anticipating. I think he was hitting the gun at the start in low 130s and then sort of got it up to around mid 130s. But that was about it. Small sample size, obviously only bowled the four overs. I think I mentioned about Doggett a few weeks ago. Once I saw his bumper plan in Brisbane, I was a little bit worried for where he sits in the pecking order, particularly with the skipper. So, it didn't shock me all that much that maybe they went with the unknown and Jai Richardson and what they can get. He's the fourth quick anyway. They've got other support and hope that there's more upside there than perhaps what there is with Doggett, who might have been the more dependable option as opposed to the, you know, high upside that they feel like they can get with Jai. So do we want to go through it? So if I look at the Aussie innings, first of all, so they walk out and bat. Travis Head chop one on and all of a sudden the Aussies were four down, four for 50. At lunch, they were still four down with Khawaja and Carey there. And then there were a couple of dismissals in particular I'm keen to get your thoughts on. Alex Carey sort of turning one around the corner, straight to leg slip. The man has been there for him a lot throughout the series. And you could see Crawley's reaction when he took the catch, sort of pointed straight at Stokes and said, yep, that's exactly what we're planning. And then there's Cam Green, who feels like he's in the hottest seat of anyone at the moment in this Australian cricket team. Clearly him being moved to seven is a nod, isn't it, from the selectors to say, hey, you're on notice, you're in the team, but now you're batting at seven. You were once the number three. And then he gets run out, which is just about the worst way he could possibly go at needing a big score. And unfortunately, he threw one away in a mix-up with Michael Nisa.
Wow. I think he only did one thing wrong because let's just give some context to the run out. I know you're in the broadcast game and you like creating narratives. So the over before, Nisa had gone boundary, boundary, boundary and actually played superbly. Square drives, you know, it had settled down a little bit as the ball had got a bit softer. So the right thing to do is actually to try and squeeze a single. And he did everything perfectly right. He dropped it at his toes. He hesitated slightly, so we can give him a half mark against him there. But he made one crucial mistake, and I actually didn't hear anyone talk about it on the broadcast, and that is when you run a quick single, run at the stumps, and particularly run at the stumps when you're 6'4" or 6'5", because the ball has to pass your big frame to hit the stumps. But instead, he took this crazy beeline out towards mid-off and gave... Cast a free crack at the stumps, all three of them. It's like you just run straight at the stumps. He's not run out there. And it's like basics 101 that you should be teaching every kid. You know, you're not changing your line. You're just running on the side of the pitch. And in that situation, at no point in time would he have been run out. The single itself was on. it was good tactical batting, and he'd actually been moving, and his movement patterns were looking okay. So I felt a bit sorry for him. He made a bit of an error, but, you know, it doesn't help when you don't help yourself.
No. So I think he's got 150, what, in his last 13 hits now, and out for 17 there. Jake Weatherall's another interesting watch. So, I mean, he's got that one score up in Brisbane, but he's sort of strangled down the leg side here trying to turn one off his pads and caught by the keeper. He got out LBW when he wasn't out in Adelaide, and all of a sudden you sort of look back through it now and, geez, he's only got, what, three more hits left in the series at a maximum, and then there's a long break until there's more test cricket to be played in August. Does he need a score, Jake, before the series is out?
Every test player needs a score, always. I know what you're getting at, but, I mean, the thing on my mind that is becoming increasingly obvious is this blind spot that we talked about after one test match. And so whether it's LBW or whether it's being caught down the leg side, it's the same issue. If your head and eyes are going to the offside, you actually can't control the bat face and you lose the tracking of the ball in the last metre. And so instead of today, you know, hitting it off the middle through backwards square, you know, he's over a little bit and he tickles it down the leg side. So, look, I think he'll finish the series, and with the score or not, he'll probably start the next one. But what he can do in the meantime is go back and score some runs in Shield cricket. But guess what? Everyone has just witnessed the big technical weaknesses. And so if they weren't picking that up before, it's going to be, you know, whether or not you can execute it or not, but that will be the plan. And so it's something to work on. And of course, with batting, you're always giving something to take something. And so he sets up like that, and it means he can pull well and he can cut well. And it means, you know, he might have the blind spot. So what can happen, he straightens himself up and he might start missing out on the cut and pull, but, you know, be fine off his pads. So it's going to be a trade-off as he works through this, and it's about finding that balance. But it's hard. There's bloody nowhere to hide when you're opening the batting in test cricket.
I know I've said it before, and I'll just keep putting it on the record. I still feel like Usman Khawaja, there's no guarantee he's going to give it up in Sydney. It feels like there's almost the cricket world feels like he'll get through to the end of the series. There'll be a change in the guard. I'm not so sure about that for whatever that's worth. And I think the move down to number five doesn't make me feel like that's any more likely. So we'll watch this space, obviously, with Uzi as the test in the series continues. So the Aussies got their turn with the ball, and for England, they haven't had a worse start in the series. They were 3 for 8 inside 5 overs. And then it felt like, and Jason Gillespie said this as well on the call today, it felt like England sort of lost trust in their technique and just gave up on it and basically said, you know what, Harry Brook comes dancing down the track, and in the end he's the top scorer in the test match with 41 at better than a run a ball, and really ran at the fast bowlers for large periods until Carey came up. And outside of that, there wasn't a whole lot of resistance. You know, Nisa got in a groove, 4 for 45, and Scott Boland picked up 3 wickets, and, you know, two guys that, you know, aren't express pace, but do enough off the seam, were able to settle into their work, Teddy, and that they made it talk on a wicket that offered them a little bit.
Yeah, they did. They just hit the right length, and to their credit, England did exactly the same thing. They bowled 4.5, 5 metre lengths, top of the stumps, and let the ball do the work. You didn't have to be a genius to work that out. But you're right, I think it unravelled for England, you know, and I kind of touched on the forward defence before, but what we haven't seen from England is any movement towards the ball with any conviction. And the Australians we have at times, but the English specifically have been hanging back and definitely not moving into the ball that you have to do in Australia, and Australia ate them alive because of it. I actually didn't mind Brook's approach. He was like, I'm going to take your length out, you know, the dangerous length, and spread the field. And when they spread the field, he didn't try and hit sixes. He knocked it around and the pressure came off, and it looked pretty easy batting at times. You know, that moment that him and Stokes kind of had a little partnership going, took a good piece of bowling to unravel him. Interestingly, though, with Boland, he was batting across his crease, you know, with the ball nipping around. It was surprising, given his stroke play, that he didn't go leg side of the ball, I thought, and give himself more chance to hit the ball. He's such a natural hitter of the ball. Why would you try and get, you know, offside of the ball and kind of, you know, limit your bat swing of being able to free your hands? So, you know, they're a little tactical things that, you know, can work and can work against you. It was a good piece of bowling to get him out. And then, you know, they crumbled around him. So Bethel, we haven't touched on. Young Romy Cowan reckons good looking. Fields a little bit can't bat. That was her summation of Jacob Bethel.
Yeah, he. I think he put one down in the field at one stage today, which he doesn't do too often. But it might have been bowling just before the close. But yeah, he just bring back Ollie Pope. It's amazing. You said he wouldn't see the, you said he wouldn't see the series out, and his replacement lasted five balls. But it's.
I mean, I'm holding grave concerns for England's batting. Full stop. Under the current, all the what I'm seeing currently of the tourists, and I know you know you look through the counting list, and we touched on it last week. Hamid, leading run scorer, you know, won a first class championship with Notts. There are people there that can bat, but under the current top down approach of Bazball and attack at all costs, they've kind of omitted a few people who probably. I think in these conditions could have provided a little bit more resistance.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to get a better opportunity, are they? They get the best of the conditions. They win the toss. They field first. They rock and roll the Aussies for 150. And then they just had to try and go about their work, and they were out in the final session and they were out inside a session again. And as a result, they found themselves with the whites back on before stumps.
I think they'll get the best of the conditions throughout, because let's just fast forward this. Even if Australia bat for two sessions, you know, fingers crossed that they can bat for three, the wicket will get another roll in the morning, and then at the change of innings, and all of a sudden, as the sun comes out in the coming days, it was obviously a cold and pretty dreary day there to start. You know, the wicket's only getting better; it ain't getting worse. And so, if they can just hold on and just play the game at a bit more of a natural pace. They'll get a chance to win this game again. I'm still 50-50 on who wins this test. I know we're all kicking cans that 20 wickets have fallen.
Yep.
But I think if Australia don't get 250, you know, I think England are a chance. It's going to get better and better. And we saw last year, as the grass died down, it was actually, you know, days three, four was excellent batting.
Well, I think Australia was 6 for 90 last year, weren't they, on the opening day? They're 6 for 90 again today. 21 tomorrow, sun's out, 26 the next day, and then 32 on day four if it lasts that long. I had Todd Greenberg, the chief executive of Cricket Australia, with me during the lunch break today. I asked him about the BBL franchise sale and where that's at. He said, look, we will make a decision in the first quarter of 2026. So I haven't heard him put a time frame on it previously, but basically said, look, in the first 3 months of next year, we'll know whether it will be put to market or not. And at that stage, it was still an if. I wonder, Teddy, if the events of today and the summer where, you know, we only had 11 of a possible 15 days of cricket through the first three, if this is another short test match here, whether that accelerates that decision and you think, look, we got to get some money into the game somehow, because these are the summers where they're meant to make bank, obviously knowing that New Zealand's coming next, and then after that it's Sri Lanka and Pakistan, that if the money's not coming in now, that the game's going to need some kind of a windfall in the not-too-distant future.
No, you're right, Corb. And, you know, it's going to be keenly watched around the country as to what happens. I also noticed on the interview he said no day-night test matches next summer.
Yeah. So the only day-night test we will have is the pink ball match, the anniversary game, obviously, which will be in March 2027. So 4-day tests next year starting in Perth. So red ball match off to Adelaide, which means that the Perth test almost kind of works as a day-night fixture given the time zones. Then the Adelaide test pre-Christmas, which will be during the day. So I was just expecting that would have been the pink ball fixture. Then onto Melbourne and Sydney thereafter, and the day night test will have to wait until the new year.
And that last day night test in March, is that for World Test Championship points or not?
That's a great question. Give that to me on notice. I'll chase that up. I don't think it is, though, to be honest.
Assume no. Feels not exhibition here. It's a test match, but it's not for anything. I assume maybe it is.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty certain it's not. Pretty certain it's not, because it's all you got to play three series home and away, and I'll come back to you on that. But that's a pretty eventful opening day. I said on the top of grandstand at stumps tonight that after Kagan's innings last year and his hip and shoulder from Virat Kohli, I thought, oh, we couldn't get a more eventful day one than that. And yet 20 wickets and we're in the third innings of the match before stumps. that wasn't on my dance card, as you would say, Teddy.
The only other thing that we haven't discussed, Scott Boland opening the batting.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be many people who have opened the batting and the bowling in a Boxing Day test. That is going to be, you know, when you that used to twist the top off, you know, the beers in the pub, and there was a little trivia question. Who is the, third player, first player? I wouldn't have a clue. Maybe that's one for Rick Finlay that has opened the batting and the bowling during a Boxing Day test match.
Amazing. And to think that that same figure, he was on a king pair when he walked out to bat on the same day. he was the last man out, walking out at number 11 in the first innings when he nicked off Josh Tung to give him his fifer, and then did well to navigate that. He made four, and I haven't heard them roar for him like that at this ground since, of course, his magical effort with the ball here when he got the 6 for 7 back in 2021. But he's popular, isn't he, the Victorian? And they'll get a chance to watch him tomorrow when he walks out with Travis Head and Australia's second innings resume. What a way to start day two of a test in the third innings of the match. Teddy, we're 20 wickets away from a finish at the end of play on day one. I'll chat to you again tomorrow, and here's hoping it's not the end of the test match.
Can't wait, Corb. Yeah, fingers crossed that we get at least a third day here.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.